We'll begin our service with the opening hymn printed in the order of service that you'll find in your front of the hymnals. Please stand. Universalist Fellowship of Winona. My name is John Collins, and Carol and I have been members for the last 12 years or so, and I serve on the Sunday Service Committee. If you're new to our Sunday Fellowship, we especially welcome you. We hope you enjoy the service and find yourself challenged and supported for your work in the world. We invite you to stay for coffee and conversation after the service. Are there any introductions by our greeter, or anyone who'd like to introduce themselves?
I'm Bob Walensky, Mickey Sabatini's dad and Julia and Mickey's granddad, and I'm happy to be here. I've been here before.
Yes, and
always,
yes.
Always enjoy coming.
Thank you.
Thank you. Wonderful.
Welcome.
He's from Wisconsin. He's just here for the better life today.
They're all coming across the river. Here's my daughter. She's from Wisconsin.
Good, thank you.
Nobody left over there.
People vote with their feet. Today is the second Sunday of Survey Sunday. And you know, today, who needs a survey form? Patty, she passes out on this side, and I have some more on this side. And our, remember what we tell us, what you tell the planning committee in May will determine the quality of programs next year. And there are 20 possible themes to choose from, as well as some that you'd like to add yourselves. There's also a chance to say a program that you'd like to put on. And that's a real positive thing, isn't it, Ray, to put on a program yourself, isn't it? You want to give a testimonial about that? No, I'm just kidding. Anyway, this is very, very rewarding to sort things out in your own mind to share with us. At the bottom, there's a chance to say how you'd like to strengthen the music program and support the music program and be a part of the music program yourself. Since this, I'm going to try to have a captive audience today, and after our program and before the second hymn, I'm going to ask all of you who've not completed your survey form to do that at this time. And we have some pencils here. And those who have completed the survey form, I have two spiritual readings that you can refer to while the others work, Margaret. Anybody else need some pens to begin to get ready to be thinking about what you want to write? And then when you're finished, bring your survey form up and put it in the red basket.
Are you collecting more next week, John?
Pardon?
Are you collecting more next week?
We're going to also collect more next week, just because there'll be new people here.
Mine's at home.
We'll be collecting next week. And it's also on the, Jan sent that out as a mailing email early last week. Okay, so then next week is the Hope Service, coordinated by John Treninga. And he has here, during our traditional end of the year, Hope Service will be recognizing new members, child dedications, and graduates. A few members of our fellowship will speak on what gives them hope, as well as moments of profound hope in their lives. Now, I remember, Laura, at the service committee, they'll talk about also having a picnic later on after that. Do you remember if that was ever finalized or we're still going with that 2 weeks later? To the board or to the...
What's up on the web page is the picnic is June 1st.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that's official.
Yeah.
Official.
Yeah. Do you remember we talked about that, though?
I thought we decided to drop it because of the small population.
Right, and we were going to have a picnic like next week after the whole service, weren't we? Do we want to go with that then? Should we go with that?
Sure.
We're small enough to decide, right, if we want to do that. And I think, did you not reserve LaCane Park for next week, or do you remember there? Or does anyone remember about that either?
I thought we were just going to do it here.
You do it here? Okay.
I thought we'd do a potluck.
We're going to decide to do that next week. We're going to have a potluck after the service, correct? And Jan, if you'd send an announcement out.
The official note is we're doing a potluck after the service in this room.
Correct.
Okay.
Next week.
Okay.
We have the potluck next week or?
Potluck next week. Oh. After the service.
So nothing on June 1st.
Nothing on June 1st. All right. Today's program is Wisdom of the Dark Night of the Soul. There's still time to leave before you hear that scare on the program. So, those who have the courage, you're welcome to stay. I thought Tove might be the first one to leave, but she'll be here with us for that. All right. At this time, we'll affirm our community by saying together the chalice reading as printed in the order of service. We have come together today.
Now is the time to make this our place. We are Unitarian Universalists. We like this chalice. It is our symbol. It represents all of the important things which make us who we are and which hold us together. Let us create our space together and make for ourselves a safe place to grow and learn and to be fully who we are.
We'll now sing hymn number 86, Blessed Spirit of Our Life, of My Life, number 86. Please stand. Shell in the water in recognition of our principle number 4, a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. We invite you now to place a shell in the water in celebration of or in concern for a person or an event in your life that we may share in your joy or give you comfort in your sorrow.
Two shells each for a lot of people. The first one for all mothers. My mother was one of the wonderful people in my life. Happy Mother's Day. The other is for a large group of people with whom I spent 9 years in preparation. And 52 years ago today, this morning, in fact, I was ordained a priest. One of the happiest days in my life.
I'll put in one shell to represent three mothers. I grew up with three mothers. I had my great-grandma, who used to make great molasses cookies after school. She sewed quilts. I had my grandmother, who sowed seeds. She had made wonderful, huge gardens and flower beds. And my own mother, who loved the color aqua. And she had three daughters, and she dressed us all alike. She made matching dresses for Easter Sunday, for Christmas. We all had matching dresses. My dad drew the line when they had a boy, and she wanted to make the matching vest, and he said no.
I'm going to put a shell in for the mothers of the girls in Nigeria that were kidnapped. Education's so important, and they're trying.
I put a shell in the water for Papa for the nice visit he gave us, and we're so happy to see him.
I'd like to put a shell in the water for my father, who's going to be undergoing surgery on his carotid artery in the next couple of days, and for my mother, who was so looking forward to coming back and seeing the grandkids and has to put it off a little longer so that she can find the patients.
Because we went, there is,
What day is it today that
you went? It is Mother Day.
I'd like to put a shell in the water for the bumblebees that are finally out, and for the warblers that are in the woods today.
Two shells. One, there's still a lot of things that are mysterious about next year, but one of them that is no longer mysterious is I think I will have a full-time job, so that's really a big relief to me. And earthworms yesterday. Earthworms. So great.
We planted our own vegetables, I think it was like 2 weeks ago, and our pea plants are already like this big, and our tomatoes just sprouted today.
And there's one more thing. My dad called one of them Master P.
I have two shells. One is for my mother and my mother-in-law and Yuni and all the wonderful mothers here. And the other, I've kind of had a strange week. I don't even really feel like talking about it. But a month ago, I started feeling some weird pains, and I thought, oh, I'm getting old, or I sprained my shoulder, or it's heart stuff again. And Thursday, I had a stent put in. Apparently, when they did my bypass surgery 3.5 years ago, things didn't get connected the way they thought it was. So I feel sort of lucky and unlucky at the same time, and I'm still trying to figure that one out.
One shell for my mother. 5 weeks ago, she had a stroke. But this week, she's going to be moving into a place
in which she needs a little bit of assisted care because her recovery has been so wonderful.
This is a shell for a good Unitarian friend who lives in New York, who also lives in Las Cruces, New Mexico, members of both of those churches. And on Tuesday, she'll be having a pretty serious operation. So for Karen and her husband, Chuck. Two shells. One for this fellowship. I just have a thanks that I have for you in my heart. And the other one for the Orioles, which are hanging out at McNally Landing.
My grandpa got chicks.
Chicks. Yep, baby chickens. And then I'm going to put a shell in. I don't know that I'll be here before my brother-in-law has surgery. He's got cancer. It had spread to his liver. They're going with an experimental surgery, or a surgery they're not sure about, where they're going to try to scrape some of the cancer spots off of his liver so that they can continue to treat the cancer. He's only 33 or 34. He's got two small children, so we're really hoping that that works.
I'm going to get my braces out on Wednesday.
I'm going to put in one more shelf for the piano bench. It has a broken leg, and it's just barely there, so if I go down, keep singing.
To give, you must receive. To receive, you must give. We affirm our fellowship and its service to the larger world through our generous gifts as we pass the offertory baskets. If you're giving a portion of your pledge, please be sure to note that. Will the children please come forward for today's story? When the story is over, the children will leave for RE. You'll stand and sing to the children, "Go now in peace," as printed in the order of service. We'll sing it one time all together, and once as a round, with the people on my right starting the round.
This is one of the best books ever, but it's especially good for today. It's called "Are You My Mother?" A mother bird sat on her egg. The egg jumped. "Oh," said the mother bird, "my baby will be here. He will want to eat." "I must get something for my baby bird to eat," she said. "I will be back." So away she went. The egg jumped. It jumped and jumped and jumped. Out came the baby bird. "Where's my mother?" he said. He looked for her. He looked up. He did not see her. He looked down. He did not see her. I will go and look for her, he said. So away he went. I know, you're so smart. Down, out of the tree he went. Down, down, down. It was a long way down. The baby bird could not fly. He could not fly, but he could walk. Now I will go and find my mother, he said. He did not know what his mother looked like. He went right by her. He did not see her. See where she is right there? He came to a kitten. Are you my mother? He said to the kitten. The kitten just looked and looked. It did not say a thing. The kitten was not his mother, so he went on. Then he came to a hen. Are you my mother? He said to the hen. No, said the hen. The kitten was not his mother. The hen was not his mother. So the baby bird went on. I have to find my mother, he said. But where? Where is she? Where could she be? Then he came to a dog. Are you my mother? He said to the dog. I'm not your mother. I'm a dog, said the dog. The kitten was not his mother. The hen was not his mother. The dog was not his mother. So the baby bird went on. Then he came to a cow. Are you my mother? He said to the cow. How could I be your mother? Said the cow. I am a cow. The kitten and the hen were not his mother. The dog and the cow were not his mother. Did he have a mother?
Yeah.
Does he have a mother?
Yeah.
Of course he does. I did have a mother, said the baby bird. I know I did. I have to find her. I will. I will. Now the baby bird did not walk. He ran. Then he saw a car. Could that old thing be his mother? No, it could not. The baby bird did not stop. He ran on and on. Now he looked way, way down. He saw a boat. There she is, said the baby bird. He called to the boat. But the boat did not stop. The boat went on. He looked way, way up. He saw a big plane. Here I am, mother, he called out. But the plane did not stop. The plane went on. Just then the baby bird saw a big thing. This must be his mother. There she is, he said. There is my mother. He ran right up to it. Mother, mother, here I am, mother, he said to the big thing. But the big thing just said, snort. Oh, you are not my mother, said the baby bird. You are a snort. I have to get out of here. But the baby bird could not get away. The snort went up. It went way, way up, and up, up, up went the baby bird. But now, where was the snort going? Oh no! What is this snort going to do to me? Get me out of here! Just then, the snort came to a stop. Where am I? Said the baby bird. I want to go home. I want my mother. Then something happened. The snort put that baby bird right back in the tree. The baby bird was home. Just then, the mother bird came back to the tree. Do you know who I am? She said to her baby. Yes, I know who you are, said the baby bird. You are not a kitten. You are not a hen. You are not a dog. You are not a cow. You are not a boat or a plane or a snort. You are a bird, and you are my mother.
Everywhere you may go.
comes from Pine Island, Minnesota. Graduating class of 87? 99, I'm sorry. Okay. She brings two special credentials with her, though, for this talk. One is during some of the dark moments of religious education that she's responsible for this fellowship. And the other is the spiritual practice of music, because I know you're musically talented. So with those two pieces of background, we welcome you to speak with us today.
In anticipation of the fact that I know that I'm not going to speak for the entire time here, I'm going to ask each of you to take a piece of paper and write down your definition of wisdom.
Of what?
Wisdom. Once you're done, if you can just pass them forward, but don't keep them separated by sides. Please.
Don't pile them?
Don't combine the two sides of the room. Like, keep this side separate from this side. I would have handed out sheets of paper earlier, but I really don't want you to think too hard about it. So depression in 20 words or less, as compiled by the Icarus Project, which is a nonprofit community that explores the space between brilliance and madness. I just discovered this community a few days ago. I certainly wish I had found it a while ago. But so 20 words or less, I'm not going to read them all that I found. It's not that uplifting. But interesting to see how people think of depression. It is the feeling of the world as too big for you to matter. When the meaning of the word meaning slips from your mind and all the other words follow like butterflies. Fighting shadows. Stuck somewhere between alive and dead. immersed in a fog, feeling unreal, unable to see things as they really are. Strangulation of the soul, silencing of the mind, paralyzation of the body. And here's quite the image. Trying to climb an unending spiral staircase with a rotting cow carcass tied to your leg. Total loss of meaning in a tiny, completely overwhelming, and forever impossible world. The desire to change everything, accompanied by the overwhelming sense that the status quo will remain. Migraine of the soul. Treading water in cement shoes while wearing a straitjacket and breathing through a straw. At first, this last image was darkly humorous to me. It made me pause. But it also was sad and frightening because my body understood what that author meant. The struggle to stay above the surface, the tightness always in my chest. I've been wearing cement shoes for a while now. I wrote the date down the other day, and with a sinking feeling, realized I've been wearing these shoes for 10 months. I would guess that were you to ask the toe from last July, I would not have explicitly said that I was depressed. But in hindsight, I recognize there were moments. And I can see how those moments started eating one another until there was no beginning or end to the moment. I've been depressed before, a number of times throughout my life. Each time, once I regained my footing, I could see that I became a wiser woman, learning many lessons that sadness has to offer. I did some reading last fall on spiritual depression, or the dark night of the soul. And so an idea and title were born for today's talk. I really excel at personal development. I like to examine and understand why I do things or feel as I do. I'm fond of evolving personally. I wanted to look at depression as a spiritual journey, or to experience it with awareness. It was sort of exciting to me, or as exciting one can be about being depressed. I knew that I would be better by now, that I would have wisdoms to share, except, of course, that's not really the way it worked out at all. Everything began to spiral for me in December. Christmas is often hard on me, and this last one was no exception. However, Christmas also marks the end of the year, and I do get excited about a new year. But within days of the beginning of the new year, my body began to fall apart. For an entire month, I had digestive issues. My body seemed to take a break from assimilating food, as it had done before, leaving me exhausted. I ended up getting 6 styes in my eye, at times some of them swelling my eyes completely shut. And then I got hives. For 19 days straight, from mid-February on, I had hives. I've never taken so much Benadryl in my life, even combined. It was maddening. I wanted to sleep above everything else, except for maybe itching. Every day, I had to convince myself to get out of bed and to make it to work. Once there, I smiled and I worked on projects, greeted patrons, and did the good job that I'm known for. And as soon as I left work, that was it. I used any energy I had in the 5 hours or so I was at the museum. Some days I would come home at 5:30 and crawl into bed until the following day at 11, when I would get up and do it again. But most days I did get up and tried to do the right things that I would know would make me feel better. Hope would make me feel better. do some yoga, used a light box, I knit, I made good food, drank copious amounts of tea, took very bright and very cold walks. And nearly every day I thought at some moment about this talk. But I never forced anything and I never worried. I felt it would come to me. I figured I would know that I would have healed by now. I cried every day, even though I had these things. I was doing all these right things. I started to have a hard time at work, though that was mostly noticeable only to me. With a week or so to go to my birthday, I realized that I hadn't been this depressed in nearly a decade, and that I needed help. Having no health insurance and no money to afford a counselor, and not even feeling like I had the ability to do any research about either, I finally sought the help from a friend and one of our community members. And after a very embarrassingly tearful lunch date at the Heron, I was finally being honest. Directly after that conversation, before I was able to get out of the Heron, I ran into another couple, where I was asked, "How are you?" In that way, you know they know you aren't well. Another conversation, honest conversation, followed, and more tears. A promise was made that should I feel like harming myself, I would call. It was an exhausting day, but also a relief. For 2 months straight at that point, I had been silently crying through celebrations and concerns because I wanted so badly to come forward and put a shell in and say, "I need help." But every Sunday, I was glued to my seat and couldn't find the strength to do it. While I still didn't get up, it was a relief to know that people in this room knew that I was struggling. I continued to have conversations one-on-one with people and tell them that I was having a hard time. I think that I had forgotten that I had cultivated such a community for myself over the years, because it came as such a shock to me how many people cared. Through those conversations and acupuncture and nutritional health and chiropractic care and getting a new job in addition to the museum, and sunshine, I turned a corner, but just a corner. Figuring out what to write for today was absolutely excruciating, and largely because a corner just doesn't feel good enough to me. I was disappointed in myself that this is as far as I've gotten. A corner. It was distasteful in my mouth and mind as I thought about it this week. A couple of days ago, I wondered why this has been such an incredible struggle for me, why I'm approaching a year of depression and have only turned a corner. And I realized the reason why is because I'm trying to get through this without the use of psychotropics. It's interesting that it hadn't occurred to me that was why it had been easier in the past. Mostly, no psychotropics for insurance reasons or lack thereof, but also because I would like to accomplish this without them, though I recognize that may not be possible, and I'm okay with that, especially now that I do have health insurance, which is good. That being said, the only piece of wisdom that I am now trying to assimilate is to appreciate the corners. I'm not there yet, but at least I'm on my way, and I should celebrate that. So, one of the things that I did this week in hopes to finally, if there were words for written for all of the time that I spent thinking about this today, it would be bigger than Moby Dick. but in it was really very difficult, and I tried to jumpstart what I wanted to say. I mean, I had many ideas, but I just really struggled at trying to put this all together. I sent a text to 100 people asking them what their definition of wisdom was. And while it didn't necessarily become a part of what I was ended up saying today, I found it a very interesting experiment to do. I had 76 responses out of 100 people, I think, which is amazing. And some people, interestingly, sent me these beautiful descriptions, or humorous, or whatever, and then said, "And who is this?" Because they didn't have my phone number, apparently, which was very interesting to me. That they were so willing to share whatever their definition of wisdom was to a stranger, one of them being Meg. So, it's loosely related, essentially, to what I'm saying today. And what I'm going to do is have you each take one of these, and then you read them out loud. Because this did, it didn't really fit with what I ended up writing, but it was very interesting to hear. I mean, I have 5 pages of other people's definitions of wisdom. And then after that, we can have a discussion if you want, or you can ask some questions. John, would you like to start?
Yes. Wisdom. Knowing that my thoughts are only thoughts and I can actually change them at any time.
And I will collect these when we're done. I'm going to compile them and you can email them up.
Wisdom, the ability to go beyond facts
and even understanding.
Okay, not the advanced, but even understanding to a higher, deeper meaning on any topic or subject. It usually develops with age and experience, both positive and negative.
Wisdom is knowing what is valuable, how to think about experiences, and how to act.
Doing the right thing in a situation where there is not a right thing to do.
The merging of love with understanding and patience.
Knowing when you don't know something or how to deal with something and being able to ask for assistance.
Knowledge based on experience.
Knowing how much we don't know and trusting the innate quiet awareness that is there when conceptual thought is exhausted.
Wisdom. Knowing when you've had enough. Knowing when you don't know the answer. Wisdom is when you're grateful for your life.
Words that someone who's gone before us and has valuable life experiences that he or she shares.
The knowledge that you gain as you go through life.
Knowing what you don't know.
The opposite of smart. It comes with age and experience. Knowing that you don't know everything.
Someone who is wise finds time among the who's, what's, where's, when's, and how's for the wise.
Wisdom, to know when to speak and know when to be quiet and listen. And the second sillier one, you've got to know when to hold them, know when to fold them, and know when to walk away and know when to run.
The ability to see beyond oneself, to put yourself in another's shoes.
Wisdom, what is learned through experience and sharing?
Knowing that you know little, but never stop learning, hoping, and loving.
Integration of knowledge and intuition, resulting in understanding through experience.
That which is learned through experience and others.
Knowing when not to talk.
The knowledge we obtain from all aspects of life, which includes knowing when to share it. Wisdom, the insight that comes from experience.
Knowing what I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Self-awareness and the utilization of this awareness in your journey to life.
Can you say that one more time, Ben?
Self-awareness and then utilization of this awareness in your journey through life.
The accumulation of life experiences by an inquiring mind and body.
Applied knowledge.
Knowledge gained through experiences or vicariously that stands the test of time.
Insightful, intuitive, connected to truth.
Wisdom is understanding what you know for sure and what you still don't know.
Knowledge and compassion and experience and love.
I like that they're very different, beautiful definitions of wisdom, and I receive many very interesting ones. I am certainly willing to answer questions. I know that my presentation is short, but that's really basically all I could manage to eke out of it. I thought I would be in a different place, but I am willing to answer or help facilitate any discussion. I don't know what time it is. It's the same time as when I started, according to that
clock. You'll give about 5 minutes.
Okay.
10:48.
Tell us a little more about coroners. That's something you said, the importance of coroners.
I see the coroner as in I haven't gotten to where I want to go, but maybe I can see it just a little bit better, whereas prior to the coroner, I didn't see it at all. I didn't understand what that looked like.
Tell us a little bit about some of the things that help to give you energy when you have depression, like maybe being with a little kid.
Yeah, kids definitely have been very helpful to me this spring. I spent a lot of time working with the K-4 RE class instead of getting volunteers because I knew that it was good for me to be in that classroom with those kids. And I had actually a very touching moment with Jasper at one point, and I was having just a very terrible morning, hard to keep myself together, and I think that there had been some miscommunication, and I didn't have a teenager doing childcare, and I was suddenly very, very overwhelmed. And I went into that classroom, and I was trying really hard not to, like, sob. And Jasper looked at me, and he saw that my eyes were welling up, and I said, I just really need you guys to listen to me today. I'm having a hard day. And Jasper, who can be quite the little imp, he like was down to business and corralling the other people for me, and still impish, but like he honed in, and it was a really special moment for me to have a little person pay attention. And actually, I think that I have learned this spring from spending some more time with kids again is that they are so intuitive and helpful.
You didn't mention music, I don't think, when you were talking, but John had mentioned that in the introduction. Do you want to talk about music and the effect that music
had? I haven't been practicing very much, so I haven't been playing. I played the Winona Symphony had a concert couple weekends ago, or was it only one week ago? So I did some playing before that, and it was good to remember. I have a mixed relationship with playing the violin because I had a teacher who I felt like was really abusive, so I spent a lot of time trying to exercise that voice from my head when I pick up my instrument, and finally she's mostly gone. But had a good stretch of time where I didn't even want to touch my instrument. So even though it is something that is a definition of who I am and people recognize as a definition of who I am, it's not something that I've grasped onto really strongly for a while. But it was good to play the concert. It was good to be on stage, and I felt good about our performance.
Well, I'm sort of a great believer in better living through chemistry. So is there some way you can access the medical profession?
Yes, now that I have health insurance. So I don't have an appointment as of yet, but I have been doing a lot of homeopathic care and nutritional stuff through Infinity Wellness. Dr. Kristen is amazing, I'll put a plug in. But and that really did help to get around that corner. But I recognize it is something, I mean, I've dealt with for my life, my entire life thus far, and that I'm chemically imbalanced and I have to find ways, period, whether chemically or naturally or whatever, to boost those serotonin levels.
You've spoken of the 75% of the people that you send an email out to, mm-hmm. or text out to, I love that. But also related to that somewhat, are there special words, is there an approach that someone that you talk to can take? And I guess on Mother's Day I would ask as a mom, what seems to help when someone else says something to you? Is there anything someone else could say?
I think just generally knowing that people care, having people ask me how I am and really actually mean it. I think that sometimes people ask how you are, but maybe they don't want to hear it. So giving the space first, me or anyone, to be able to answer honestly, mm-hmm. is really very helpful.
Vince Hatt has spoken with us many times, and in one of his talks a couple of years ago, he alluded to a period of very deep depression he had gone through. And I always remembered his comment that if you haven't experienced this, there's no way you can understand what it's like. And afterwards, I asked him, again, like Margaret just did, was there anything that was helpful? And he said he had one friend who said, I will be with you until you get out of this.
And that has been hard. I've felt like some of my friends, because they lack understanding, have been very unavailable to me. So there were points in which I felt absolutely dire because it didn't seem like anybody understood those few close people, like really close people to me. I had one person tell me that, and they didn't mean it in any mean way, but said that I had been unavailable for months, and that was just absolutely heartbreaking to hear and made me very angry to have somebody say that to me. To say that I was unavailable, because I was like, I've been unavailable to me. So, I mean, I'm sorry, you know, like I wasn't available to you.
We have time for one more comment, please. Thank you.
I want to thank you for your courage and honesty. And, I mean, you're one of the greatest people I know. Not just for speaking, but living your life. And a lot of people who have been depressed, I guess, and I'm kind of along the same theme. I always wonder, well, how much does it help if they want to talk about it or to maybe individually analyze it versus just do things? I know one person said, I'd rather just play backgammon with you than talk about this. Mm-hmm. And that seemed to be what that person needed. So I guess I'm just curious, maybe it just depends on the time.
I think it depends upon the time and it depends upon the person, because there are some people that it is very therapeutic just to sit and play. I had a friend who I spent played a lot of Mancala with this spring, and there were very few words ever spoken, but the community, that communion of those quiet moments is really very helpful. As well, but it does depends upon that moment, what my needs are, and whomever's available and in front of me. So, thank you.
All right. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Tove. Okay. Mm-hmm. It was interesting to hear a lot of the comments had to do with about wisdom. Had to do. It seemed to me to be a very active person in terms of experience. You know, there's a lot of comments about experience. We've heard, we all know Emmett, and we all know a little bit about Jasper, but we might want to know that Oscar is a left-handed pitcher, and he drafted a lot of left-handed pitchers in the fantasy draft, didn't he? Okay. We're going to complete the survey instrument now, if you would, and put them in this red basket. So we're going to take a few minutes to do that. Those who have finished the survey, Margaret, there are two readings that you might want to look at. And I had it written down somewhere. I can find it over time.
No, Ray.
And that is particularly reading number 652. So those of you, as you finish, take a look at reading 652. The Great End in Religious Instruction. Are there extra forms? Because those who come next week that haven't had that, are there some extra form, blank forms around? Another reading would be 655, whosoever wishes to know about the world. Take about one more minute if we could.
Thank you.
seated for music, followed by a brief period of silent meditation.
One piece.